Radio Influence. The future is now.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Games Galore 47. It's football season, folks. Getting started tonight. Well, actually, we had a few games this past Saturday. Last bit of preseason action in the NFL. But we have real live regular season ball games tonight and tomorrow night and all day Saturday. And we got a game Sunday and even Monday. It'll be Go Hokies time. Harbaugh will be in Tallahassee at the Toilet Bowl, otherwise known as Joke Shamble Stadium. We're in Harbaugh's studio, Seagrove Beach, Florida. But Harbaugh is working on another project, and we've got Jerry Petuck running the show for us, Jason Floyd's partner over at RadioInfluence.com. What's happening, Jerry?
What's good, brother? What's good? Jason's slacking today.
Yeah, he's slacking as usual. Actually, we're kidding. He's got Bucks duty.
As no, we're not. No. Don't cover for him. He's slacking.
Okay, he's slacking. He's being a slacker. Yeah, he called a nice underdog UFC last week, though, with, why am I forgetting his name? The plus 280 dog. He beat Warley Alves. I'm shooting a blank on his freaking name. It was his fifth straight win. Anyway, that was a nice call by Jason. But enough being nice to Jason. It's football season, and he's a Noel and a Buck fan, and I'm a Falcon fan and a Gator fan. So
and a slacker.
It's football season. Do I say that again?
And a slacker.
That's right. And a slacker. So, there we go. Okay, I've only got one pick tonight. Gonna give it away, and it'll, let's see. Well, actually, it kicks off at 8 Eastern, 7 Central. So hopefully we'll have some listeners hear this pick before kickoff, and probably will. I like Tulane tonight. First off, let's go over all the lines. We've got UCF at UConn. UCF is 24, total of 70. That's ESPNU, 7 p.m. Eastern. We've got Northwestern at Purdue. And see, this game to me is just an impossible handicap because Fitzgerald is just playing coy with Clayton Thorson, the school's second all-time leader in career passing yards, tore his ACL in that game. I don't like to talk about against Kentucky because I was way overinvested on the Wildcats that day, and I was at -7. The line had shot up to like 9.5. I came back with a little bit of Kentucky action, but not, I mean, like maybe 15-20% of what I had on Northwestern, and they were sitting there with a 7-point lead. So I would have pushed my big wager and at least had a slight profit with UK +10. And Fitzgerald decides to go for it on his own 30 with about a minute 30 or 40. Now, Kentucky did have their timeouts, so it wasn't – anyway, he didn't give it to Justin Jackson, the school's all-time leading rusher, on 2 4th-and-1 plays in that game. I'm still bitter at Fitzgerald. But anyway, Thorson – they end up in that game, the Music City Bowl – Northwestern doesn't get it on 4th down from like their own 30, 35. And then Kentucky scores a touchdown. And then those assholes, Stoops. Harbaugh, what's stupid Stoops is what your father-in-law calls him. Stupid Stoops. Stupid Stoops went for 2, even though he had all the momentum. And see, overtime, I still could have potentially won, but didn't happen. So I'm bitter at Fitzgerald. Anyway, what got me on that is Clayton Thorson tore his ACL in that game. And, you know, that was what, like, it was a couple days after Christmas, like December 28th or 9th. And, you know, so it's debatable whether he is 100%. It's debatable whether he's going to play. He's been listed as questionable. And Fitzgerald has refused, you know, he's just playing coy. So we don't know if the school's perhaps the school's best quarterback ever. We don't know if he's going to play tonight at Purdue, and that's what makes this, to me, an impossible handicap. So Northwestern at Purdue is obviously a big pass for me. All right, let's get here. I was going to explain my Tulane pick as I get to my write-up, and here we go. All right, so first off, I like Willie Fritz a lot as a coach. Did a great job at Georgia Southern, and now going into his third year at Tulane, you know, you can see that Georgia Southern's really fallen apart without him. And, you know, that a lot, I mean, sometimes that kind of thing can be misleading, but a lot of times it nails it when you see a quality coach go elsewhere and then that program just fall apart. Hopefully that's what's going to happen with Ohio State, because Urban Meyer is not long for the Buckeyes. When I look into Urban Meyer's future, Do you know what I see? I see him as an assistant coach in the NFL into his late age. And we will get to much more of that despicable debacle of a shit show press conference last week. But back to Tulane. Okay, 5-7 straight up last year, but they were 8-4 against the spread. They should have gone to a bowl game, but they lost 4-1 possession games. They lost 3 games by 6 combined points. But at home, they were very good. 4-2 straight up, 5-1 against the spread. This is a team, you know, now they're going into the third season, as I said, with Fritz. So he's getting, you know, where the vast majority of the roster are his guys, his recruits. They only lost 14 Lettermen. They bring back 9 starters on offense, 5 on defense. They added an offensive tackle in Noah Fisher, who's a grad transfer from South Alabama, who was first team all Sun Belt last year. They also got a Texas Tech transfer running back in Corey Dalphine, who's going to get a lot of touches right away. And 2 home underdog spots last year, 2-0 against the spread. Now, the number is 6.5 at most books, a total of 56.5. I obviously recommend you buying the half point to the key number of 7. Tulane plus 7 is my play, and I personally got a small taste for less of Tulane on the money line at plus 215. Not only is this a play on Tulane, but it's a play against Wake Forest, and it's a system recipe that I love, and that is always going against a quarterback making his first career road start, whether that's college, whether that's NFL, first career road start for Sam Hartman, a true freshman, and under the lights on national television for his first collegiate snap. He's going to have a lot of nerves. And the reason why he is getting the nod from Clawson is that their starter, Kendall Hinton, is out for the first 3 games with a suspension. And the guy that probably, I mean, I guess I can't say definitively, because I certainly don't want to say he'll be the starter, you know, next week if he's ready. But the guy that had some experience outside of Hinton is Jamie Newman, but he's doubtful tonight with a quad injury. But whether he's available or not doesn't matter. Clawson is going with Hartman. So we get to go against a freshman quarterback taking his first collegiate snap, and he's on the road. And Wake Forest's second-best wide receiver, Scotty Washington, 45 receptions for 711 yards and 3 touchdowns last year. He's doubtful with a shoulder injury. And so Clawson's going into his 5th season at Wake. They've only been road favorites twice, failed to cover both times, and 2 more personnel notes or factors that I'll throw out at you. The Wake punter, Dom Maggio, third team all ACC last year. He was planning on adding place kicking duties to his repertoire this year, as well as the punting duties. He is out indefinitely with a throat issue. I don't know what happened there. I hope the poor guy didn't get kicked in the throat or hit in the throat on the football field. But anyway, and then Wake's second best running back, Arkeem Byrd, 395 rushing yards, 5.1 yards per carry last year. He's out with a season-ending injury. So I like the Tulane Green Wave plus the 7 by the half point if your number is 6.5. And if you're feeling frisky, get you a little small taste for a smaller amount, obviously, of Tulane on the money line. Should be north of plus 200. I got plus 215. I didn't make it a play on my website and Vegas Insider, that the money line that is, but Tulane plus 7 is my lone pick tonight. Okay, the other games, obviously mentioned Northwestern at Purdue. That's an 8 p.m. Eastern kick. That is ESPN. Purdue minus 1, and the total is 52.5 or 53. New Mexico State at Minnesota. Minnesota minus 23, total 48.5 or 49. Minnesota's breaking in a freshman quarterback as well, but they are at home. New Mexico State is in about as bad a quote-unquote situational spot as you could ever have, because Minnesota, obviously didn't play this last weekend, so they're rested, if you will. But New Mexico State played Saturday night, late night, and then had to travel across the country. I mean, I would assume that they left yesterday morning and traveled all the way across the country to Minnesota. So short preparation, short week, on the road, cross country. I'm not very high on Minnesota this year, and I'm not going to eat this chalk, favored by that much. But it's a bad situation for New Mexico State, and they looked awful last week. Wyoming took it to them early and often on their home field in a 29-7 win, and New Mexico State's only touchdown came with like a minute 30, a minute 40. So it was a garbage touchdown at garbage time. Okay. Those are the four games with, just FBS versus FBS, if you will. SEC fans, Aggie fans, Giggum folks, A&M is minus 40. Well, I see a couple of 48s. But I see a 46 at Bet Online, and I see a 49.5 at the Westgate. So, if you're in Vegas, run down to the Westgate, get you a Northwestern State plus 49.5 ticket, but only do that if you also have a Bet Online account, and then go take the Aggies minus 46 and hope you hit a middle. You got 1.46 would be a push, and you got 47, 48, and 49 would be a winner both sides, if you wish. Oklahoma State is 40. They only released when that FBS team is playing an FCS team, they only released the line, for Saturday, they'll release it like Friday afternoon. And for these tonight, they didn't release them until mid-morning or late this morning. So that's why you kind of seeing numbers that are all over the place. So again, here we've got Oklahoma State. I see a 40 at William Hill, but there's a 41.5 at Westgate. Obviously not as big a discrepancy as Bet Online and Westgate with Northwestern State and the Aggies. But Dumbo Fisher had named Kellen Mond his starting quarterback. Seemed a surprise. A lot of people. We'll see. I'm sure we'll see both guys tonight, Starkle and Mond. But Mond, given the starting nod, that's an 8:30 p.m. Eastern kick on the SEC network. Okay, Jerry, I know you're not a big college guy, but how could anybody not have seen, because shit, it was on the national news the next day. Did you at least catch some highlights of that tone-deaf press conference in Columbus, Ohio, with Urban Meyer last week?
That was one of the most unbelievable press conferences I have ever seen in my life. I have never seen arrogance personified like Urban Meyer during that press conference.
You have never spoken truer words than those right there, my friend. I mean, this guy, I have been telling our listeners ever since this show started, and loyal readers know that if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. This guy is a total scumbag. I mean, I'm obviously a huge Gator, and I could not argue with the results when he was there, but I never liked him. I like cocky. I like arrogant. I love Steve Spurrier, but his brand of cocky arrogance is so over the top and so unattractive, and that smug fucking look on his face all the time. And I mean, that when he got asked the question about Courtney Smith, I mean, did he fumble the ball on that one or what?
It was embarrassing. Anybody that was watching that wasn't pissed off watching Urban Meyer's arrogance and just his whole nonchalant, you know, holier than now attitude. And, you know, and I know you're a Gator guy. You know, I'm based here in Tampa. I've got a lot of friends that are Gators. I'm familiar with what happened in Gainesville that was never reported. You know what I mean? And you know exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. It's not a secret anymore what Urban Meyer is. And, you know, there's a fine line between cocky and arrogant and what we saw out of Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I mean, it's pretty much that simple and that cut and dry. It was just I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And, you know, as you say that, I was just kind of perusing around some websites. It looks like a Ohio State trustee has quit the board of trustees over this stuff.
Oh, I'm not surprised by that. You're gonna see more of that.
Oh, absolutely. This story has legs. It's so far from over, and he is hated so much by other coaches, and even the people that like him, they don't like him anymore after last week. And I mean, people are after this guy. Every sports investigative reporter is trying to find dirt right now, and there is dirt to be found. And I'm telling you, this Zach Smith, he knows where the bodies are buried.
Oh, hell yeah, he does.
He knows where the bodies are buried. I mean, and by that, I certainly mean he knows every NCAA violation. He knows every little secret about Urban. A lot of those secrets, a lot of chatter about them as he left Florida. Perhaps, yeah, just, you know, I don't have any proof. I can't say it. Perhaps stepping out a little bit. There's a lot of legs left to this story. And I mean, I think Urban's got to like almost funnel Zach Smith cash to keep him quiet.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Everybody just assumed that Urban Meyer, you know, his loyalty was you know, to Earl Bruce, who is Zach Smith's grandfather. Right. Can I use the bullshit card here? Because
you're damn right you can.
Like you said, Zach Smith knows where the bodies are found. Urban Meyer was covering his own ass. Let's call a spade and let's be perfectly honest here. Yeah, sure, his relationship with Earl Bruce had something to do with it, I'm sure. But bullshit, he was covering his own ass. And, you know, this is just getting started. I don't know if you saw this yesterday or not. Did you see Zach Smith's Twitter tirade yesterday?
Absolutely. In fact, Jason texted me to point it out to me.
Well, and it's funny. Well, because I'm the one that texted him and said, holy shit, are you watching this?
Yeah.
You know, the homeboy's not helping himself here.
No. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up.
And let's be honest, and for anybody that didn't see it, Zach Smith went on an outrageous Twitter tirade yesterday, calling out both Courtney Smith and Brett McMurphy, threatening a lawsuit with Brett McMurphy. And then he started posting pictures of his own children.
Right. That's just when you're,
that's as low as that. That's desperation. And I'm sorry. That's as low. That's just lowbrow. It's a low blow.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy, I mean, there's no reason, even the Earl Bruce stuff. I mean, at some point, it was just, and I like to call him Oscar, like as in Oscar Meyer Wiener, the hot dog. At some point, it just became Oscar's not worried about Earl Bruce. Excuse me, he's worried about his fucking self, because
yeah, he is.
Zach Smith knows about stuff, whether it's NCAA violations, whether it's this, whether it's that. And I think I think, like I said earlier, I think that Urban Meyer's future is as an NFL assistant, and he better start being nice to some people if he wants to be that.
Oh yeah, because, no doubt. Well, you know what? I will say this. You know, the relationship between Urban Meyer and Bill Belichick. I don't know how familiar you are with that now, but there's not much of a relationship there anymore. The falling out happened over the Aaron Hernandez thing because Urban Meyer put his name on Aaron Hernandez to Bill Belichick personally.
Right.
And we all know how that played out.
Absolutely.
So, you know, who in the NFL would give him a shot?
Yeah, I mean, you don't. Who wants that cocky asshole that, you know, is disgusted that he's not a head coach? I mean, he was, like, going back to the presser from last week, I mean, the guy was livid. He was livid at the situation. Not only was he not remorseful in any semblance of, I mean, no, not one iota of regret or remorse, nothing. Not only that, he was pissed.
He's delusional.
Pissed off. Yeah, delusional. Is that what you said?
Delusional.
Completely delusional. He is just in his bubble of a football world, and he sees and hears nothing else, and it's pretty pathetic.
Well, I will say this, you know, being based in Tampa, I've known Brett McMurphy a long time.
Right.
Would I say we're friends? No, but we certainly have a lot of mutual acquaintances, and we've done a lot of business together over the years. Brett is one of the most stand-up guys I have ever met in the business.
Right.
McMurphy wouldn't roll with something unless he had it ironclad, and everything he's reported has proven out to be spot on. So absolutely. For Zach Smith to start threatening lawsuits, I imagine Brett sat back and laughed at that.
Oh yeah, and remember when Brett was texting Zach Smith's lawyer like maybe like a week and a half ago? The first text back from the lawyer was "You are so fucked," talking to McMurphy. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah, McMurphy doesn't get the credit he deserves. And, you know, I'm glad. I think he's landed at Stadium now. They got a good one there because McMurphy is one of the best in the business. And, you know, I imagine ESPN is probably kicking themselves now for letting him go. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then ESPN allowed him to go on. Well, you know, I love Van Pelt. There's not many guys at ESPN that I hardly like anymore, but I love me some Scott Van Pelt. And, You know, Van Pelt had to really go to bat, you know, with the uppers, you know, his bosses about it. But he insisted on, look, I don't care. We're having Brett McMurphy on my show tonight. And he got him. And that was
well, sweet. and that's a testament to Van Pelt's credibility, too.
Absolutely. And he, you know, he has a lot of guys. He'll have a lot of guys on there, you know, that. He doesn't look at it like, oh, I've got to go with ESPN's guy for whatever, NBA or NFL. Right. He goes wherever the hell he wants to do his interviews, and I love that about him.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But, you know, I think the next, I don't know, a couple weeks, it's going to be very interesting watching Urban Meyer and how he squirms because this story is not going away.
No.
And you know what? The more Zach Smith talks like he did yesterday, And hopefully his lawyer or, you know, his kids, you know, that are young, but somebody got his phone away from him because his social media stuff, dude, it's going to bury him even more.
Yep. And what is this on his Twitter? It says hashtag not me. So
you know what's funny? I just pulled it up and I just saw that.
I wonder how long he's had that on or if he put that on there like right when this story broke.
Is he trying to play off the Me Too thing?
That was my first thought. I mean, is that what you thought when you saw it?
I literally just saw it for the first time, and that's what ran through my head. And if that's the case, that makes him a bigger asshole than I thought he was.
Absolutely. I mean, what else would it be? That's,
oh, you know, my God.
Hashtag Me Too, and he's like, hashtag not me.
How about this? Zach Smith, hashtag asshole.
Right? There you go. That would be way more accurate.
Good Lord.
But like, okay, so the media is not going to, well, maybe the local media, but there's going to be national media on his ass when he's first, you know, face of the media. I guess he's just going to say, I'll let my statement, you know, speak for itself, or you know, because it's so crazy how he has to have a handwritten released on Twitter, you know, word for word. I mean, you know, he has like seven different people read that, or and I'm sure somebody else wrote it.
I was going to say, you mean the statement written by an Ohio State lawyer? Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. And
if Urban if Urban were smart, he wouldn't say another word.
Right. And he's not. But there, first off, I mean, we see the trustee quit. Okay. I don't see any way that, unless they just win a national title and the whole fan base does like kind of like Auburn did with Cam Newton, you know, just fuck everybody except us, and they win the national title. That's about the only way I see him at Ohio State next year. And not just because I think that they might fire him, but I think he is bitter as hell and he might just leave. I mean, so I really don't think he coaches Ohio State beyond this year. And like you were saying, now I know there are struggling football programs at college that would hire him, but I think this is going to, and I wonder if there's a statute of limitations on NCAA violations, because I think he's going to get busted for some NCAA violations here soon. And I'm sure they probably stem back to his Florida days as well. I mean, they couldn't possibly put us on probation like a decade later, could they?
I don't think so. How long has he been gone from Florida? What, didn't he leave in 2012?
2010 he left.
Oh God, was it that long? Yeah, I guess it was, because yeah, his last game at Florida was the Outback Bowl against Penn State, correct?
Yep.
That's okay. That's right, because I was on the Outback Bowl broadcast that day. I remember that. That's right. I don't know why I was thinking 2012. You know, all it's going to take is some national media guys to dig into his time in Florida.
Oh yeah.
Because that's something that's never really been dug into before by the national guys, and the local guys in Gainesville and in the state didn't go there because, you know, it was Urban Meyer. He could do no wrong. Just wait until the national media digs into his time in Gainesville.
I hope Charles Robinson of Yahoo is on this. I hope, because you remember how he busted up the Canes and the Nevin Shapiro stuff. Oh man.
Look, you can be a good coach and not be a good guy. And that's exactly what Urban Meyer is.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't like to stereotype, but I would say that can probably apply to 65% of coaches, if not more.
Yeah, but there's a difference between being a not so good guy and being a bad guy.
Oh yeah, no, right. Absolutely.
And the stuff that we know Urban Meyer has covered up in his past to cover for his players. Let me throw a hypothetical out there to you.
Sure.
Urban Meyer's time in Gainesville, had he not had St. Timothy there, had he not had Tebow under his watch, I think he'd have been exposed back then.
Yep. And you know, I got asked that question on this show I do on Thursdays in Clemson with Kwok and Kelly. Last week, not this morning, Kelly asked me, she's like, how is he viewed by, you know, Gator fans? And I told her, I go, I mean, pretty much all Gator fans that I know absolutely hate the guy.
Oh, like, so do I. Yeah, same here.
He would never, ever be invited back for like, let's say 10 years from now, 2028, they're doing a year reunion for, you know, the Tebow's second national title team. Urban would not be invited to the swamp for that. Period. No.
He might be buried in the swamp, but he wouldn't be invited back.
Right. Yeah. He'd get his ass booed off the field.
I'm not talking about like the swamp, the stadium. I'm talking about an actual swamp in Florida. He would probably be buried in the swamp next to the Gators, not the football team, but the actual Gators.
Yeah. And just another point on his audacity. I don't know if you'll remember this part, Jerry, and loyal listeners know that, I hold Urban in much lower regard than Jeremy Foley. And I think of Jeremy Foley, the former Florida AD, I think about as much of him as I think of a cockroach. I cannot stand Jeremy Foley. It never could. And one of his dozens of just completely moronic decisions was that when Urban quit on the Gators for the second time in 347 days, he offered him a job as like a athletic department administrator and paid him $1 million, $1 million. That was going to be, his role. He was going to stay around, and he talked about he was going to go to high school volleyball games and all this bullshit. All he was wanting to do, and I wrote it in the article that I read portions of it last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I just lost my train of thought. Where was I going?
Foley paid him $1 million.
Right. Yes. Okay. So yeah, Foley pays him $1 million, and then, you know, like a month later, literally, he signs with ESPN to travel around during spring football and, you know, do features on teams. But essentially, this dude, he was just traveling around and, you know, he was just getting everything in line for his next job. And then the trestle stuff happened. And you just knew that Ohio State was going to be the job that he would get. You know, he was talking about he was retired. He was gone one year, and he worked for ESPN that year. And right when he got the Ohio State job, within weeks of taking that job, and so you got to understand, he's just within a year of being paid $1 million by the University of Florida, another one of the many millions he got from the University of Florida, and only doing that job for 1 month. He didn't refund that money to UF. So within a few weeks of being the Ohio State coach, he turns the Gators in with an accusation to the NCAA for a violation. The NCAA investigates Muschamp and his staff and finds that the Gators did nothing wrong. So he, within weeks of having a job, 1 year removed from taking $1 million from the University of Florida, 1 year removed from having quit on the University of Florida twice in 347 days, he is turning us in for something that we didn't do.
Yeah, and you didn't mention the fake heart attack as well.
Oh, sure. That basically, he saw a lot of L's in his future from Nick Saban, and he got the fuck out of town because that's his character. That's him.
Yeah, it's Chris Landry, who does a podcast with Radio Influence. He's been around for a long time. On his podcast, he put it perfectly.
I listened to that soundbite you guys had. It was very good. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. He put it perfectly. He goes, when the going gets tough, Urban goes.
Yep.
And, no doubt. And, you know, Chris is one of those guys, you know, he's the one that originally introduced Urban to Bill Belichick. So he's known Urban since 81.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, you know, and I don't want to pimp his podcast on yours, but, you know,
I listened to his podcast. Chris, as much of what he said, he was harsh on Urban, and I loved it.
Oh, go ahead. Chris flat out said that he was embarrassed and ashamed that he ever put his name on Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Because he helped Urban get the wide receivers coaching job at Notre Dame back in the day.
Yep.
Chris was the one that called and made that happen, and he went postal. If anybody hasn't listened to it, you know, listen to last Thursday's episode of the Landry Football Podcast, but cheap plug there. But
at radioinfluence.com.
That's right. just the whole situation is just disgusting. And, you know, I just wonder if Urban has it marked on his calendar the day he's going to fake a heart attack at OSU.
God, I hope Michigan. Everybody in America's favorite team this year is whoever the hell's playing Ohio State.
That's for damn sure. What gets lost in all of this? I feel bad for the Ohio State players.
Yeah.
No, they didn't do anything to deserve this.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
You know, so the players may come out and play balls out for the rest of the year and say, hey, screw you guys. This is what we're made of. Yeah, I think it's going to be one extreme or the other. They're either going to buckle or they're going to play balls out. It's going to be one extreme or the other.
Yeah, and the other extreme would be like when Arkansas lost Petrino. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Petrino had never gotten a motorcycle wreck. All those injuries were just from the ass beating his mistress fiance gave him. I know that to be a fact. I know that to be an absolute fact if I've never shared that on the show. So
that's funny.
We'll see. But anyway, that Arkansas season, which had so much high expectations, just went in the toilet, the negative extreme. I hope Ohio State season goes to the negative extreme because they've got three other legit top 15 teams in their division. Mm-hmm. And then there's Wisconsin as well. They don't play Wisconsin in the regular season, potentially rematch in the Big Ten championship game. Games galore, 47. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Jerry Petuck and I are going to be right back. Don't go anywhere. Back in a few. Welcome back to Games Galore 47. I'm your host, Brian Edwards, with Jerry Petuck running the show for us from Tampa with Radio Influence. .com. We're not necessarily done dropping a deuce on Oscar Meyer's face for this show, but we are going to move on to a few other topics for the time being, at least. Teddy Bridgewater traded from the Jets to the Saints yesterday, along with a sixth round pick. Mickey Loomis and the Hoodats sending back a third round pick, and this is just a wonderful story developing with Bridgewater just looking very sharp in the preseason for the Jets, but the Jets committed to Sam Darnold and are liking what they're seeing from him, and so third round picks are, you can get really, really good football players with third round picks, but you know, if I'm Bridgewater, Jerry, I'm probably a little disappointed because I think Drew Brees has only missed, I remember he missed a game at Carolina like 3 or 4 years ago. There might have been one other game that he missed, but I'm almost certain that Brees has only missed a maximum of two starts during his tenure in New Orleans, which started in what, 06? Because Katrina was 05. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 06. So, I mean, Breeze just, I mean, he's not one of the bigger, like, tougher quarterbacks in the league by any means. The exact opposite. Well, I'm not going to take away from his toughness. Look, he's one of the best ever, period. But he just plays so smart. He doesn't, put himself in harm's way to take a bunch of big hits. And Bridgewater, the assumption here is that, Brees is not going to be too much longer in the league. And that if Bridgewater is looking that good, he could be the heir apparent. And what a great story that would be, because that injury, I've read some doctor's quotes. I mean, they really were fearing potential amputation on the day of the injury. So it is just a remarkable story, and he, from all indications I've ever seen, he's a class act, and so real happy for him. But I'm sure he would have rather stayed right there with the Jets, and if Darnold, got the rookies and played poorly, I just think he has a better shot for playing time in the immediate future there. Okay, so staying in our NFC South, I'm interested in your take, Jerry, on – because you're down there in Tampa and have lived there for a long time. And so you've obviously, been there throughout Jameis Winston's tenure, obviously a controversial figure. And now, he is suspended for the first three games of this season. And, I think, look, Tampa Bay's got some of the best wide receivers in the league. Mike Evans, I don't know that he's there yet, but I think one day soon he will be called the best receiver in the NFL. So there's really no excuses. But look, if you get off to an 0-3 start because your QB was screwing up off the field, there's got to be a bad taste toward him. And so I guess what I'm getting at is, like, what kind of season does he have to avoid the organization potentially, saying, okay, this is not our franchise guy into the future, and I don't know, try to trade him or cut him or whatever. What kind of season do you think he needs to have to, you know, be back in the good graces with the organization, with the fans, and to, you know, instill confidence that I'm still your guy for the next decade? What do you think he's got to do for that to be the case?
I've kind of got a couple of points of view on this. I think one, the time away may actually benefit Jameis Winston maturity wise in the long run. You know, all along when he's, you know, gotten in trouble and granted, I mean, since he's been with the Bucks, there hasn't been a whole lot go on other than the one incident. But throughout his entire life, anytime anything has happened, he's always still had football. Now, right. The NFL has laid down the suspension. He doesn't have football for the next, you know, month or so, you know? So I think it might be a way. I'm hoping.
Is he allowed to practice? Do you have any idea if he's allowed to, like, practice during that time?
To the best of my knowledge, he's not allowed to be in the building.
Right. I think that's usually the case with these suspensions, certainly ones that are, you know, without pay and from the league.
Right. As far as, you know, does the organization move on from him? Here's the thing. You know, Jason Light is the one that drafted him. Jason Light was given a one-year contract extension during the offseason. And personally, I like Jason Light. I think he's a fairly decent GM. He hasn't drafted the greatest, but I think he's on the right path as far as rebuilding the Buccaneers. I think those two are going to be married at the hip. I know when the Bucs drafted Jameis Winston, Dirk Cutter wasn't a big fan. I know he wanted the Bucs to draft Mariota. Dirk Cutter was the offensive coordinator under Lovie Smith when Jameis was drafted. So I'm not going to say that Dirk isn't necessarily in Jameis's corner, but there's always been some skepticism there. Right. You know, I think Jameis comes back, for lack of a better term, reinvigorated. I think he's going to have a different perspective on things. I don't think you're going to see the rah-rah, we're eating W's and that kind of crap. I think we're going to see a different kind of leader out of Jameis Winston. And frankly, I think it's much needed. You know, I think you're going to see a guy that comes back, is more mature, you know, has his head on straight a little more, and is more of a leader than a cheerleader. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And look, it's past time for him to grow up. I mean, his nonsense shenanigans are so just.
Well, and the thing, you know, the thing to keep in mind, and I'm certainly not giving him a pass on anything, so don't take it that way. But the thing to keep in mind, he's still, what, barely 23, 24 years old? You know, when this stuff happened, he was a 21-year-old kid.
Right.
You know, and you know, again, I'm not excusing what he's being accused of. I'm not excusing anything, but I know I was 21 once and I did stupid shit.
Oh yeah, so was I.
You know, and now you put a stupid, immature, maybe stupid's not the right word, but you know what I'm saying in context. Yeah. You know, an immature 21-year-old kid with millions of dollars of NFL money. You know, I think his big problem is immaturity. You know,
he's 24. I just looked it up.
Right. Okay. So, and this latest incident with the Uber driver happened, what, 2 years ago? So he'd have been 22.
Sounds right.
You know, so I'm not excusing it. I think he's got a lot of growing up to do. I know he's very football smart. I know he's very book smart, but I think we've all known people in the real world that are very book smart and intelligent that don't have the common sense that God gave a piss ant, you know? So
yes.
I think his big issue is immaturity. And I think this is going to be a wake up call. And, you know, as far as, you know, do the Bucks move on? Here's the thing. You drafted him to be the face of your franchise. 4 years later, you know, he hasn't progressed the way you want. If you cut ties, now you're starting all over again. And, you know, you've basically wasted the last 4 years. Yeah. I personally think the Buccaneers are in bed with Winston for as long as they can go. Because in my opinion, if the Buccaneers cut Winston, they're waving the white flag and they're admitting they made a mistake. And right. I've been around the Buccaneers and the Glazers a long time. They're not exactly ones to do that.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. You know, so I, you know, everybody down here is all up in arms. They're like, oh, well, if Ryan Fitzpatrick goes 3-0, and I'm like, guys, come on. Fitzmagic isn't going 3-0. Let's cut to the chase, okay? Yeah, I think I saw that the Buccaneers, the first three games are it's the toughest first three game stretch in an NFL schedule in history. It's like, come on, he's not going 3-0. You know, a lot of fans down here are clamoring for him to start, and it's like, he's been in the league 14 years, has been on seven different teams. If he was going to start, he'd have done it already.
So they're at New Orleans week one. New Orleans was in the NFC semifinals last year and was about to win on the road until it was Stefon. Wasn't it Stefon Diggs?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah. So till you know that great play by the Vikings. So, you know, the Saints were so close to being in the NFC Championship game. Okay, then week two, the Bucs host Philadelphia. Those are our reigning Super Bowl champions. And then they host the Pittsburgh? Steelers, yeah, who were in the AFC Championship game. I'm sorry. What am I talking about? The Jags were in the AFC Championship game. Steelers were in the AFC semifinals last year, but are perennial, you know, Elite Eight NFL version, if you will, you know, at least that far pretty much every year in and year out. So that is a brutal way to start. And then when Jameis comes back, you know, you got to go on the road at Chicago, which I'm not saying Chicago's even a top 20 NFL team, but it is on the road. So, you know, the road is the road in the NFL. So
yeah. The first three games of the season, the teams are a combined, 11 and 13, that's 24, and 13 is 37. The two teams are combined 37 and 11.
From last year.
With the Saints, Eagles, and Steelers.
Yeah, and again, the Saints, that could have easily been 38 and 10 with the Saints NFC title game pending, if not for that miraculous play from Case Keenum and Stefon Diggs for the Vikings. Okay. Let's get back to college. Let's go through some stuff. Let's look at tomorrow night's card. All right, we've got the Cuse at Western Michigan. The Cuse -5, total of 65.5. Loyal listeners will know I talked a little bit about the Cuse earlier this summer. I think their 4-8 record last year was about as misleading a record as you could possibly have. Let's not forget, this team was 4-3, had beaten eventual college football playoff semifinalists and at the time defending national champions, Clemson. They had beaten them. They were 4-3. They had lost a one possession game yet covered as 13.5 point dogs at NC State, and NC State had, you know, a very solid season. What did they end up winning? Yeah, they went 9-4 last year. So they had lost a one possession game to a 9-4 team on the road. They had gone to Baton Rouge and easily covered as 21.5 point underdogs and lost 35-26, but they had cut that deficit to 28-26 with like 5 or 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They go down to Miami after the Clemson game in your most vintage letdown scenario you could possibly have after, you know, one of your biggest wins, period, much less at home. And I mean, probably going back to perhaps even the Donovan McNabb days. I mean, that's how big a win that was for the Cuse, and that's how bad they've stunk. But look, I like Dino Babers a lot. All he has to show right now is a pair of 4-8 seasons, but I think he's got this program going in the right direction. So anyway, they lost that game to Miami. They should have won. They committed 4 first half turnovers and yet still had the ball in the red zone down by 8 late. And even though it was a vintage letdown scenario, I thought the odds makers overcompensated for that and made Miami a 17-point favorite. So I had the Cuse in that game, and they covered for me. And then I took them again the next week at FSU, and they had no business losing that game. They lost by 3. They missed a potential game-tying field goal on the last play that wasn't like some 55 yarder. I mean, I'm not saying it was 35, but it was, I want to say it was like a 41 or 42 yarder, very makeable field goal that he missed. In fact, let me look at the stat. Yeah, this is how well they outstatted FSU in that game. They had 463 yards, whereas the Semis only had 343 yards in that game. And they out first downed them by a 21-13 margin, and yet somehow lost that game. And then Dungy, he got hurt against FSU, and but he came back. He had, that's another thing. He missed. He got injured on like the first or second drive, and missed the rest of the first quarter, and didn't come back till like mid second quarter. But then he played well. But apparently, I don't know if they shot him up with something, you know, when he was out in the first quarter and early second or what. But, I mean, he played well that second half, but he didn't play again the rest of the year. He missed the last three games, and this team is all about their quarterback, Eric Dungy. So he missed the last three games, yet he still rushed for a team high. Well, 787 yards before subtracting sack yardage, 9 rushing touchdowns, and he threw for 2,495 yards, 14 touchdowns, and 9 picks. So he probably throws for over 3,000 yards if he gets to play those last three games. He is a big-time quarterback, and he is healthy. I'm not saying to lay the 5 at Western Michigan. So let's talk about the Broncos. Out of the MAC, obviously had the undefeated regular season under PJ Fleck 2 years ago before losing a one possession game to Wisconsin in the Cotton Bowl. But last year, first season under Tim Lester, who is third all time in career passing yards at Western Michigan, they go 6-6 straight up, and they go 5-6-1. Against the spread. Western Michigan brings back 8 starters on offense, 5 on defense. They only lost 16 Letterman. They did lose their top 3 tacklers, but they lost their stud running back, Franklin. But they've got John Wasink back. So what, he's a 3-year starter now. He started the first 8 games last year, and then he went down with a season-ending injury, and without him, the Broncos went 1-3. So they were 5-3 with him, and 2 of those 3 losses were at Michigan State and at USC. And you'll remember they played USC very well. That game was tied at 31-31 early in the fourth quarter. USC got like 2 long touchdown runs, and I think they had like a turnover that set them up I think it was tied at 28-28 rather than 31-31. Yeah, because USC, they might have even got a defensive touchdown in that game. So anyhow, so Western Michigan at home against the Cuse, be their first home dog spot under Tim Lester. Let me look at what Babers and the Cuse have done as road favorites. Actually, they've probably not even been road favorites yet under Babers. Let me see. Getting back to their page here. Road faves. Yeah, they have not been road favorite. In fact, this is their first road favorite spot since 2014. And that would have been a cover at Central Michigan. So, their last road favorite spot, they covered against the MAC team. They got the different directional Michigan this time, not Central. They've got Western, and that is a early kick tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern on the CBS Sports Network. Also tomorrow night, Western Kentucky at Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 36.5 and 52. You remember early in the show, I said that, you know, oftentimes you can tell a good coach. I was remarking about Willie Fritz at Tulane, how Georgia Southern's kind of gone in the shitter without him. Well, Western Kentucky has kind of gone in the shitter without Jeff Brohm, and Purdue is suddenly got a pretty good football program all of a sudden. So that is complimentary, certainly, to Purdue head coach Jeff Brohm, and is kind of another way of me saying Western Kentucky is going to have one of their worst teams in years this season, and Wisconsin will throttle them. But I try not to make a habit of laying more than 21 points, much less more than 31 points or 36 or 36 and a half that Wisconsin is laying. But I have talked at length this summer about the Badges, and the Badges are going to be very good. They're going to easily win the Big Ten West, the weak side of the other division, like I remarked earlier, four legit top 15 teams in my mind. So look, Phil Steele's mag and pretty much every preseason publication has Wisconsin's offensive line ranked as the nation's best two preseason first team All-Americans. In fact, David Edwards, as a sophomore last year, was a second team All-American, and Bo Benschwell, I'm sure I screwed up that pronunciation. He was a third team All-American last year. So, and they're preseason first team All-Americans. And look, Jonathan Taylor's probably the best running back, not named Bryce Love, in the country. A couple of notes, and by the way, Taylor, true freshman last year, 1,977 yards, 13 touchdowns, 6.6 yards per carry. Wisconsin finished 13-1 last year. The only loss, 27-21, setback to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Nine starters back on offense, four on defense. Now, they've got two wide receivers are suspended for this game. Quintez Cephas, 30 receptions, 501 yards, six touchdowns. He's out indefinitely. He is facing some sort of charge, accusation, allegedly, with a co-ed. And I saw a headline the other day that his lawyer was seeking to get the case thrown out. But as of now, Cephas is suspended indefinitely. And apparently his roommate was somehow a part of the whatever happened, and Danny Davis, but he was given a two-game suspension. They shouldn't have any problem winning those two games, Western Kentucky tomorrow and New Mexico, the Fighting Bob Davies. But Danny Davis suspended the first two games, 26 catches, 418 yards, and five touchdowns last year. Okay, Army had their best season and who knows how long last year, a 10-win season, a second straight win over Navy, who they had not beaten in, I want to say, like 12, 13 years until they snapped that jinx in 2016. But look, so Army goes 10-3 last year. By the way, if I didn't mention it, they are a 13 or 13 and a half point dog at Duke tomorrow night. That is ESPNU. That is a 7 p.m. Eastern kick, total 45 and a half. But so Army goes 10-3 straight up last year, 6-7 against the spread. Let's see, as an away dog, they were only 1-3 against the spread as an away dog. But they lost their stud, Ahmad Bradshaw, their quarterback, who ran for 1,746 yards, 14 touchdowns, 7.2 yards per carry. So that's a big loss. They only bring back three starters on offense. But now look, their defense, 2 years ago, their defense gives up only 19.8 points per game. Last year, they give up only 22 points per game, and they bring back eight starters on that side. So Army should be good defensively this year. New quarterback. So I believe it's going to be Kevin Hopkins. Or here, I can verify that right now. Let's see, where are we here? Yep, he has been named the starter, Kelvin Hopkins, a junior. He got very, very limited playing time last year. 6 of 18 passes, 76 yards, one touchdown, one pick, and four rushing attempts for 33 yards. So I got no clue on Army's offense. Love me some David Cutcliffe. That line opened at 11.5 and 47.5. It will be a pass for me. Stanford and San Diego State, revenge game for the Cardinal. San Diego State won. Oh God, what was that score last year? I believe it was 20-17. But they come to Palo Alto here in this spot, 9 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night. Fox Sports 1. Stanford is 14 or 14 and a half. The total 48 and a half at most books. There are a few 49s out there. Colorado State. Wow, did they look awful last week. Breaking in a new quarterback. I had talked about how they lost a lot of talent. And you know, Mike Bobo was hospitalized for a couple of weeks. He did get back to practice last Wednesday, but as a 17-point favorite, they lose to Hawaii 43-34. And I think it was 37-7 when I switched it over to the UFC fights. And by the way, props to Justin the Highlight Gaethje, huge win over James Vick. First round KO. And I hope you listeners listened to me and went with Michael Johnson. It was a little hairy there, but we got the split decision nod, as that was my top pick from last week. And I was also on the underdog that I liked it too, but Jason went to great lengths to explain it. And I'm refusing to look it up because I just know his name's going to come to me in a minute. I cannot believe James Krause. There, I knew it was going to come to me. James Krause. I swear I didn't look it up. It just came to me. All right. So I'm trying to think, do I want to say anything else about the UFC card? My rewind is on VegasInsider.com if you want to check it out. I also did a rewind of the four lined games from last week in college football. We called it a week zero rewind. You can check that out at VegasInsider.com. You can follow me on Twitter at VegasBEdwards. You can follow our Games Galore Pods Twitter account, which I'm not looking at it. I think it's at Games Galore Pod, if I'm not mistaken. You can follow RadioInfluence.com on all social media outlets as well, and at Jason_Floyd, follow the MMA report. Jerry, what's your handle?
It's simple. It's at Jerry with a J, P-tuck, P-E-T-U-C-K.
That is very simple. No underscore confusion like Jay Floyd's got going on. Colorado State, 17-point favorite. They lose outright, and we're getting blown out at home by Hawaii. Okay, Hawaii, not very good. Although that quarterback, Cole McDonald, he looked good last week. Well, the Rams bounce back mode. I think this is the last time that CU and CSU are going to play. What's the Broncos stadium? Invesco, I think it used to be, or maybe still is. Anyway, they're going to go back to the campuses starting next year with this in-state rivalry. But Colorado is 7.5 right now, total 65, 66 range. I even see a 64.5 out there. I'm not a big teaser guy, especially in college. Occasionally in the NFL, I'll take two home favorites between 6 and 8 and go with that. But I don't do it in college much. But if you, the listener, are a teaser guy, you like teasers. I'm not necessarily, you know, a big fan of Colorado this year, but we saw Colorado State sucks. So I think it's a safe assumption Colorado is going to win this game. So that game could be tease material. And there was another game of somebody, it's on Saturday. Somebody else is like a 7.5 point favorite that I was thinking could maybe be paired up with the Buffaloes as I'm scared. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Cal at home. They have a few injuries, but North Carolina has just got a slew of suspensions and a couple of injuries as well that I tweeted about the other day. In fact, that's a good idea. I'm going to go to my Twitter account and share a lot of the injury news that I've been tweeting about this week, because you got to stay on top of your injuries, especially this early in the season. Okay, so Oh, and by the way, just quick UFC note. Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Love that guy. He loves Budweiser's. So do I. He has basically divorced with Jackson Wink Academy in Albuquerque. He's going to move back to Colorado. He felt they dicked him by siding with the new guy. Platinum Perry, he's only been out in Albuquerque he's been based out of Orlando forever. I think he's only been out there for like 3 months and he's fighting Cowboy. And anywho, they decided Winklejohn's going to train Perry. And so there's some bad blood brewing there. Cowboy was on Joe Rogan's show yesterday, hammering Budweiser's, dipping his mouth, and talking shit about Winklejohn. He still loves Greg Jackson, though. All right, some of those injuries I alluded to. All right, Texas wide receiver John Burt is out at Maryland with a foot injury. 57 career catches, 835 yards, 4 touchdowns. Longhorns are 13.5-point road favorites. We already have discussed from weeks ago Iowa suspending some key starters. In fact, they've got 4 starters out due to suspension with Northern Illinois. And remember, Northern Illinois went on the road and won outright at Nebraska last year. They get a chance in a similar spot. I think they were 10.5-point dogs to Nebraska in that game, maybe 11, and they're 10.5-point dogs to Iowa right now. But yesterday, I tweeted, as I learned, that the Huskies' best wide receiver, Spencer Tears, has been suspended. 43 catches, 528 yards, 4 touchdowns last year. Leading returning receiver, Spencer Tears. I forget if it was just a 1-game suspension or an indefinite one, but regardless, he will not be in uniform against the Hawkeyes, and neither will their starting tight end, Mitchell Brinkman. And if you're listening out there, Mitchell, my apologies. In my initial tweet, I said you were suspended like Tears, and some woman named Donna, who works for Northern Illinois, emailed me and made sure that I deleted my tweet, which I don't delete tweets like John Bones Jones. I retweeted it with the correction that Brinkman was injured, not suspended. And Mitchell, your girl Donna, some office at Northern Illinois University, she was all over it and made sure that I got that corrected. And I did. And anytime I'm wrong about anything, I will always be the first to admit it. So let me know. Hopefully I'm not that wrong very often. Hopefully I'm not wrong at all on any of these games this weekend. Let me share another one with you. Let's go with a team that a little under the radar squad, but you heard Brad Powers early in the summer. We had two great, and by the way, if you're new to the show and haven't, we had Brad as a guest twice this summer, and both of his appearances were outstanding. And even though one of them was back as far as I want to say late June, they all were geared toward week one and season win totals. So everything that we said back in late June still applies. Now, I'm not as bullish on South Carolina's over just because the numbers changed, but it's gone from even money 7 to like minus 180 on 7, and some books have moved to 7.5. But everything that we talked about, all those opinions are still in play. So those old Games Galore pods with Brad Powers, there's 2 of them in the archives from this summer. You can go listen to them tonight, tomorrow, Saturday morning, and still get some good intel. Okay, and what I was saying was Brad and I are both bullish on this UMass team. UMass, Mark Whipple, he has got a outstanding offense this year. Andrew Ford is a player, 22-4 TDINT ratio last year, and that was with he missed 2 games. But nonetheless, threw for 2,924 yards, as I mentioned, 22-4 TDINT ratio, 63.2 completion percentage. They thumped Duquesne, FCS opponent, as they should last week, 63-15 as a 21. and a half point favorite. So now they go on the road at Boston College. A lot of pundits, prognosticators, what have you. I haven't heard a lot of sharp handicappers necessarily that bullish on Boston College, but a lot of people think Boston College, you know, could be the third best team in that division in the ACC, perhaps overtaking NC State. But NC State does have Ryan Finley back. I like BC's roster. I love Dylan, the running back. But I hate their quarterback. I mean, they so outplayed Iowa in that bowl game. I watched that miserable defensive struggle for like 3.5 freaking hours. Was winning ahead of the number the whole damn game. And then they let Iowa get that long kick return and a late touchdown to beat me. So I'm bitter at Boston College. And the Adazio, he's one of Oscar's boys. He knows where the bodies are buried too. But anyway, so UMass is plus. Well, I got it at 19 early this week. It's 18, still a few 18 and a halfs out there. I've talked about Andrew Ford, their quarterback. Andy Isabella, 65 receptions last season, 1,120 yards, 10 touchdowns. He had 5 catches, 131 yards, and 2 touchdounds last week, and a 14-yard touchdown run on a gadget play. The last 11 times UMass has been a road underdog, 9-2 against the spread. That includes easy, greasy covers at Mississippi State and at Tennessee last year. I like, well, the Minutemen, they lost by double digits 3 times last year, but one time was by 11 at Mississippi State, and we're getting, you know, 18 and change here, so that would have been an easy cover. And by the way, they led that game at halftime, and I think that's one of the games Ford missed. Yes, that is. They had their backup quarterback and led at halftime at Mississippi State. If memory serves, I think they were catching Mississippi State in a flat spot the week after they'd lost that heartbreaker to Alabama. But that's neither here nor there. Out of the L's by double digits last year, there are only 3. And we're talking about a team that went 4-8. So, I mean, they played a lot of close games is one of my points. But the other 2 L's that came by double digits would have been spread covers with this line. They lost by 18 and they lost by 10. So they did not lose by more than 18 in a 12-game season last year. And they're better this year, and I would certainly argue that the team they played at Mississippi State last year, which was ranked number 21 at the time and could have easily beaten top-ranked Alabama the week before, and therefore they would have been like number 8 in the country rather than 21 if they'd beaten number 1 the week before like they should have, lost that lead in the fourth quarter. But anyway, I would certainly say that Mississippi State team from last year was much better than the Boston College team this year, and I think UMass has improved. So UMass, gobble up those 2 touchdowns, a field goal, and then a little loose coin as the Minutemen are going to cover at Boston College. Michigan at Notre Dame. Okay, I lean Michigan here. But it's not making the cut of my plays this week. I kind of need to see Shea Patterson. How's his chemistry with his new teammates? How's that knee? I mean, he tore that ACL in mid-October. I mean, he's good to go. He's a starter and all. I'm not implying that he's, you know, I am implying he's not necessarily 100%. I'd probably say he's more like 90 or 95%, but let's see how he performs in a road game against a legit top 20 team in his first taste of Big Ten action when, you know, he's not necessarily at 100%, which I don't know that anyone is, you know, a little more than 9 months removed from tearing your ACL. But I do think Michigan's going to have a nasty defense this year. I think they're the better overall team. I lean their way, but they lost Tariq Black, their best wide receiver. They lost him to I believe it's season ending. It's certainly for a long period of time. And I don't know why these injury reports all have him listed as questionable this week. he is out and for out for a long time, maybe the entire year. So that was a big blow for Michigan, but they are going to have an elite defense. And I think Shea Patterson, presuming he is healthy, he will have or he will give them a major upgrade in quarter. I mean, their quarterback play was like Florida quarterback play last year. I mean, they only had 9 touchdown passes and they had 10 interceptions between 3 guys, a 9-10 TDINT ratio. That's not getting it done, folks. That is not getting it done in the toughest division in college football. Okay. Ole Miss, Texas Tech, total 67. I see a lot of points, but 67 is a lot of points. But I made it 74, and I'm going to go with the over. I think that A.J. Brown, DeMarcus Lodge, and D.J. Metcalf are going to have big games against a Texas Tech secondary that has a couple of injuries. And I think I tweeted those earlier today as I'm looking for them. Well, maybe it was yesterday. Not seeing them. All right, I see some other injuries, though. Well, yeah, so Ole Miss running back Eric Sweeney out indefinitely with mono. Ran for 195 yards, 3 touchdowns, 4.8 yards per carry last year. And another running back, Devon Penniman, is out indefinitely with a knee injury. So those two guys were the Rebels' two leading returning rushers. So Matt Luke is going to go with a JUCO running back, and Scott Phillips getting the start. They're a little thin at running back. And I mentioned a minute ago the UNC suspensions, and I said they had an injury or two. Okay, I found that tweet. Starting junior defensive tackle Aaron Crawford, he is out at Cal due to a knee injury. And Crawford had 29 tackles, 3 sacks, 2 tackles for losses, 6 QB hurries last year. And now running back Michael Carter, questionable with an undisclosed injury, 558 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns last year with a 5.8 YPC, as in yards per carry. My quick hit thought on Ole Miss this year, they should be very good on offense, perhaps great on offense. They are going to be horrible on defense, the worst defense in the SEC, unless Vanderbilt's defense just loses some guys to injuries or something. You can go ahead and mark Ole Miss worst defense in the SEC. So I think the over is the way to go there. 67. All right, let's talk the big game. The best game on the board this weekend, going down in my Falcons' house, the Mercedes-Benz Dome, Washington against Auburn. Now, can you folks remember the last time Chris Peterson brought a team to Atlanta for a season opener? I can, because Kellen Winslow absolutely decimated and destroyed the Georgia secondary. Did I just call him Kellen Winslow, as in the Chargers old school tight end? And I won't mention his son, that criminal, allegedly charged, not convicted yet. I meant to say Kellen Moore, the southpaw lefty QB, one of the best quarterbacks in college football history, period. Kellen Moore went into the Georgia Dome, outplayed Aaron Murray, and Boise was up 35-7 late third quarter. Georgia got a couple of low rent touchdowns to make it more respectable, but a misleading final, 35-21. Look, when Chris Peterson was at Boise, he didn't mind going cross country to give out an ass beating. He did it to Georgia. He went to RFK Stadium in D.C. He did it to Frank Beamer and the Hokies. Let's also remember, look, Auburn is going to have, the crowd advantage. I mean, probably to the extent to 85, maybe 90%, but they don't play well in Atlanta. We saw that in the rewind of their rematch of the game they had won at home. Just Auburn's nasty at Jordan-Hare, and they're not the same team when they're not at Jordan-Hare. And so Washington's plus two. I think they went outright. Now, a big issue on this game, their two-time All-American offensive tackle, Trey Adams, he's questionable with an injury. And, you know, anytime an All-American level player is potentially going to be out, that's a big deal. But when you protect the blind side of Jake Browning, the school's second or ranked second in career passing yards in Washington football history going into his senior year, when you're talking about protecting that quarterback's blind side, and what is Auburn's strength outside of, you know, Stidham, the quarterback, their strength is their defensive line. So to me, and I might be setting myself up here, might be jinxing myself. Like right now, a lot of books are at two. There's a couple of books are at 1.5. So I lean Washington here, but I'm not playing it yet. And here's why. And again, I hope if I set myself up and Auburn wins by one, I will look like the biggest fucking moron ever. But here's my point. I want to know if Trey Adams is playing. Okay. And so I'm going to wait to find that out. And if I lose out on the better number, that's okay, because in other words, I think there's also the chance that this number could get back to the key number of three. In other words, if I can't get three, or if I have to buy it from two to three and it's like minus 135 or minus 140, you know, I don't want to do that. So my thought process is I want to know if Adams is healthy, and I want the number to go back to three. If I find out Adams is healthy and I don't get the chance for the number to go back to three, and even it goes against me and goes from, you know, two to one or even pick them, like, you don't bet Washington plus two because you think they're going to lose by one. You bet somebody, you know, you bet somebody of an underdog of less than three, you're not betting them because you think they're going to lose by one or two. You're betting them because you think they're going to win. Now, I just set myself up for a nightmare scenario. Auburn's going to win by one. But that is my thinking. Hopefully the number will get back to three, and hopefully Adams will get upgraded to probable. But a big game for both teams. Look, if this quote-unquote neutral game was in, say, Topeka, Kansas, or Omaha, Nebraska, I mean, I would have Washington favored by probably five. So they are the better team. I've got them higher power rated, but, you know, it's essentially a road game. But we've got a huge head coaching advantage with Chris Peterson over Gus Malzahn. So those are my thoughts there. The Vandy line has gone all the way down to three. Wow, I even see a 2.5 and even a two at CG Technology. So that's very interesting. I am all of a sudden getting potentially interested in Vanderbilt at three. And as they go south of three, even more so. I would, if it wasn't for the DJ Durkin situation, I would be all about Maryland plus 13.5. I talked about them earlier this summer. They've got three Power Five transfers that are, you know, stepping in to start immediately on defense, a defense that was awful last year. But, you know, you get a guy in Byron Cowart. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the name, former five-star recruit, was a UF commit early in the process, but when Muschamp got fired, he followed Muschamp to Auburn and was just a major disappointment there. Eventually transferred, went the JUCO route. So, you know, we're talking about a guy, five-star, you know, he's got NFL written all over him coming out of high school, who has just been a massive disappointment for Auburn and as a college football player in general. So, you know, he went JUCO and now he's got his chance. So we have a very highly motivated five-star guy that you throw in at starting defensive end. So we'll see how he does. I mean, you know, Maryland gave up 37.1 points per game last year. That's horrible. They also add Illinois grad transfer Trey Watson. In 3 years at Illinois, he had 188 career tackles and 10 tackles for loss. And former semi Marcus Lewis, who started 15 games for the Noles in two seasons, sat out last year as a transfer. He's going to step in and start at cornerback, but I just can't get behind Maryland here because of the Durkin situation. Obviously, Texas is in revenge mode, but in my contest, I'm going to have Maryland, and I lean their way. I just can't pull the trigger with all that turmoil. I mean, it's not just Durkin. I mean, obviously, the strength coach has been fired, but I want to say there's another assistant or two, I believe. I could be wrong on that, that are suspended. So our guy, Christopher Smith, by the way, he hooked me up. I'm going to be writing a column for the New Orleans Times Picayune every week, a Saints gambling column. And Christopher's doing the same on the college front for AL.com and for the Times Picayune as well, or NOLA.com. And I bring up Christopher because he's done a lot of great picks for us over the last year or so. And he's a big fan of Marshall this week. Marshall -2.5 at the Gus Raglans. That's Miami of Ohio, a MAC Conference USA showdown. That total is 51. Okay, other games. Who do I want to hit on? So Nebraska's Trey Bryant, running back, had to retire. Lingering knee issues. Scott Frost names his true freshman quarterback, who was in for the spring, Adrian Martinez, as his starter. The backup, Bolts. Where did he transfer? I think he transferred to Oregon State earlier this week. Speaking of the Beavers, they are 38.5-point dogs at Ohio State. That's ABC. That is noon Eastern Saturday. I'm interested to see how App State's new quarterback is. You know, you lose a four-year starter like they did. I mean, if they had not lost their quarterback, I'd be all over some App State +24 at PSU. Happy Valley on Saturday. That's 3:30 p.m. Eastern, Big Ten Network. Scott Satterfield continues to do great work at App State. 9-4 last year, 10-3 in 2016, 11-2 in 2015. But they lost Taylor Lamb, man. 27-6 TDINT ratio, third all-time school history in career passing yards. Number one guy, obviously, are Monte Edwards, who had to who led that. Wait, is he the one? Yeah, he led that upset at the Big House. Yeah, he was on that team, and then he played wide receiver for the Panthers for a while. But I like the Mountaineers in general, but I got to see the new QB. It's going to be Zach Thomas. But they still got Jalen Moore, first team all Sun Belt last year. That's a game I'll have my eye on a little bit in the 3:30 afternoon, although I'll be focused on Auburn, Washington mostly. FAU at Oklahoma. I lean FAU. Man, this line has not moved all summer long. I mean, I think there might have been a book or two that shifted to 20.5 at one point, but this thing has just been sitting on 21 and getting good two-way action for months. I lean FAU, but their run defense against Rodney Anderson scares me a little bit. But look, Kyler Murray is a great runner. But, you know, you got to downgrade at QB when you go from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray. I mean, look, the dude can run. There's no doubt about it. But let's remember, he had a 5-7 TDINT ratio as a freshman at A&M. He was a freshman at the time, though. So, anyhow, what else? Boise State at Troy. Very interesting game. ESPN News, 6 p.m. Eastern kick. Talking about a old school veteran quarterback similar to Taylor Lamb at App State. Well, same deal with Neil Brown's Trojans. They lose Brandon Silvers. 10,684 career passing yards, second in school history behind only Corey Robinson. Caleb Barker has been named the starter. He beat out Sawyer Smith. But the Trojans, they lost a lot. Now, they bring back 7 starters on offense, 5 on defense, 11-2 straight up last year, 7-6 against the spread. One of the losses at Boise State, but they covered in the opener last year out on the Smurf turf. 11.5-point dogs, 24-13 L. So they covered that. Last year they won at New Mexico State, which was a team that went to a bowl and won a bowl. They won outright at LSU, which was ranked 25th at the time as a 20.5-point underdog. And then they just had that classic letdown spot after you win in Baton Rouge. You come home, it was a midweek game too, to South Alabama, and they lost outright as a 16-point favorite. You know what? I think Joey Jones, who got fired at South Alabama last year, former Alabama tight end, I think he – let me look here in the coaches. I think that Neil Brown hired him, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see. Well, maybe not. He got hired by somebody in Alabama. Maybe it was Alabama, actually. Maybe it was his alma mater. I'm not sure. But anywho, since he at UCLA, look, UCLA, not only do they have a lot of suspensions, they've got a lot of injuries. Now, I don't really have a good read on the Bearcats this year, but I'm down on UCLA. I mean, Chip Kelly walked into a situation that's not that great. It's going to take him some time. And as I've talked about, you know, the two guys that certainly aren't the two best hires of the offseason, but certainly have, without question, the best opportunity to be really, really, really good in their first year. That's Moorhead at Mississippi State, and that's Sumlin at Arizona. And by the way, I lean Arizona against BYU 11-ish, 11.5, I think was the last number I saw. I'm trying to find it on the board here. Yeah, here we go. Oh, looks like it's – damn it. I should have played it already. Well, a couple 11.5 still left, but I see CG Technologies up to 12.5. And who is this at 13.5? That would be going the wrong way. The Mirage, MGM Mirage, is up to 13.5. Doggone it. If you can still get 11.5, and I buy the hook to 11, I consider 4, 11, and 18 key numbers, not to the extent that 3, 7, 10, 14, et cetera is, but I you know, you get a lot of 28, 17 games. 11 hits a lot, 35, 31, 38, 34, et cetera. Told you I lean Cal at home against North Carolina. That's 4 p.m. Eastern on Big Fox. Louisville and Bama in Orlando. I wrote a long preview on this one a couple mornings ago. Check it out on VegasInsider.com if you wish. Bama's 24.5, 62. Now, our friend Christopher Smith is very high on the over on this game. In fact, he wrote an article for AL.com basically implying that Alabama is just going to be an offensive juggernaut all year long, especially against these defenses they're facing here in September. And he thinks it's going to take a while for the young secondary. Now, it's a reloaded, not rebuilt secondary. It's reloaded, but there is some inexperience. He thinks that Bama's secondary will be much better, you know, come mid, late October and November than it will be in September. But the thing is, I think he got this over under at like 50. It was like mid. I want to say it was 56. And now it's all the way up to 62. I even see a 63 at the MGM. So Hawaii can get off to a 2-0 start when they host Navy. This is your late night chase game. You do not have an NFL slate of games on Sunday. Or, I mean, I don't think they have a preseason game on Sunday. I don't bet preseason, so that's why. So, in other words, this is your last call for alcohol and late-night wagers. Navy at Hawaii, and guess what? You guessed it right. It is televised. CBS Sports College Network 221 channel on DirecTV. Navy favored by 11, the Fighting Ken Nui Matalolos. All you fans of Clemson against Furman, 12:20 Eastern. Doesn't look like that one's on TV. The Gators, my Gators. Let's see. What time do the Gators? The Gators kick at 7:30. Oh, God, that's so awesome. Love that. Charleston Southern, SEC Network, and Mississippi State. Oh, Nick Fitzgerald is suspended for this game. Mississippi State plays Stephen F. Austin on ESPNU, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Now, Thompson, he played well in the bowl game. They beat Louisville after, remember, Fitzgerald had dislocated his ankle in the Egg Bowl. And Thompson, he actually, you know, he led a second-half rally in the Egg Bowl. He's got a future. So, I mean, look, it's a downgrade from Nick Fitzgerald, certainly if Nick is back completely healthy from the ankle. But Thompson's a pretty good quarterback. But where I was going with this is these numbers will probably be out tomorrow afternoon, late afternoon. Sometimes they wait till Saturday morning on these FBS, FCS games. But since it's a season opener, I would think they would be out sometime tomorrow afternoon. All right, let's see. What else? Let's clean up a few things. I'm scrolling down my Twitter timeline looking for some injuries that I haven't mentioned because there are lots of them out there, lots of suspensions too. If you missed it, Brandon Dawkins, former Arizona QB, when Indiana named Peyton Ramsey their starter, he bolted. He transferred. He gone. The Gators are going with Felipe Franks. You know I'm disappointed in that. Look, I've been very consistent on Felipe Franks. He's got all the talent in the world. Great size, great arm, moves well. And look, I know he was a redshirt freshman. I know he was getting horrible coaching from Needlemeyer, Nussmeyer, the OC, and the swamp donkey, McElwiener. And the coaching has improved with Mullen and his staff. And he's a year older. So look, I want to be wrong on Franks, but I just don't think the dude's ever going to get it, man. I really don't. His decision-making, all the little intangibles that you got to have to be an elite quarterback, he's got all the talent. I just don't think he's got the intangibles. And I hope I'm wrong. I would be thrilled to be wrong. I want him to light it up and make me look like a dumbass, and I will call myself a dumbass while he goes and wins me an SEC East title, hopefully. But loyal listeners know I think there's a much greater chance of South Carolina unseating Georgia if that is to be done. And you also know that that's my favorite game of the year. It's my upset of the year. South Carolina will beat Georgia at Williams-Brice Stadium in week two, and we'll probably vault into the they'll definitely vault into the top, my top 10. I've got them at 14 here to start the year. Kentucky had a big loss this week. Offensive tackle Landon Young out for the season. Ouch. Knee injury. Played all 13 games for the Cats last year. Started six. They've got one of the best running backs in the country in Benny Snell. So that hurts UK. By the way, they're going with Terry Martin, who started his career at Oregon, the JUCO transfer, who I haven't seen him play, but I hear he's a speed guy. Not Terry Martin. I think it was a Terry Martin that played for Georgetown basketball in the 80s. Terry Wilson is who I meant to say. He's going to be the starter for the Kitty Cats that are favored by 17 against Central Michigan. And as a home favorite, Kentucky went 0-5 versus the number last year. So I started, you know, doing some homework on Central Michigan, just looking for just a few morsels of positive information to make me pull the trigger, because there's never anything wrong with going against Kentucky when they're favored by more than two touchdowns. You will never get a gripe from me for that thought process. But as I looked at Central Michigan, I'm just not seeing it. I just don't know that I can go with the Chippewas. In fact, I was writing about this game in my SEC notebook. And by the way, I also wrote up the Stanford home game against San Diego State. You can find all those at VegasInsider.com. And I'm going to clean up my website, BrianEdwardsSports.com, either tonight or first thing tomorrow morning with a lot of new stuff as well. And I'll have links to all those previews that I write on VI. But yeah, CMU, 8-5 last year, but only four starters back on offense, only six on defense. They lost 28 Letterman. They lost their quarterback. And I hate playing a team in week one when I've never seen their quarterback play. Sometimes it happens in week one. And I lean Central Michigan. I think they'll probably cover, but I can't put them in my picks when I've never seen their quarterback play. All right, Jerry, what you got, man? Any last words for our listeners?
Yeah, one last point. Zach Smith is still a douche. That's all.
I love that. I was gonna say any shout out, and I was thinking, well, I want to shout out at Oscar Wiener because he's such a freaking asshole. I mean, everybody in America is going to like Ohio State's opponent as much as their favorite team every week. It's going to be beautiful, and I hope they go 7-5. I will be immensely amused if that happens. Oh, wait, here's one more injury. Indiana suspended running back Morgan Ellison. Team high, 704 rushing yards, six touchdowns last year, 4.9 yards per carry. He will not play Saturday at FIU. All right. Thanks to Jerry Petuck. Loved his insight on Oscar, and he got after him. I got after him a little bit. Gave you some picks, and hope you enjoyed the show, folks. Follow me on Twitter at VegasBEdwards. Follow RadioInfluence.com on all your social media platforms. Enjoy the games tonight and all weekend. It's here, folks. No more waiting around. No more boring-ass summer nights with not shit on TV to watch. We got ball games. Bets and ball games all weekend. Good luck to you. I'll be adding more picks. If you want to purchase them, you are free to do so. You, with all my picks, you get a very detailed written explanation of why I like the pick. And if I go, 2-4 on you, you just email me. You'll be free the next week. So, do that. Enjoy the games. Best of luck. Games galore. 47 in the books. Over and out.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Look out, Syracuse, for Western Michigan. Look out. That is a team that could cause them a lot of problems. And I want to see kind of where that Syracuse program is you got to go out and you got to beat Western Michigan if you're Syracuse, if you're going to be a player. Watch Duke's linebackers against Army, how they go up and defend that offense. Michigan State Friday will have their way with Utah State. Curious to see if they have any first game blues. And then Wisconsin, can they match up? They will match up. Offensively, defensively, matching up athletically against Western Kentucky's passing game. I do think watching Colorado State respond and play better against Colorado is something that I'm really looking forward to see. I expect a much better effort. But Stanford, San Diego State. Now, San Diego State is a tough little matchup. Stanford is a well-coached team that gets better as the year goes along. Could San Diego State catch him again? Remember last year they did. You would think that Stanford, after having dealt with that last year, would be really focused and energized to get off to a good start.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.